You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
I liked this better when it was the original TV show, Gary Hartman. That was great.
Man, that's a deep cut.
Yeah. Deep cut.
Sorry.
Like, there's like memories of me at like 8.
I think the last time anybody saw that show, Gary Hart was still a viable candidate.
Exactly. Sorry, everyone who's not our age. And you, even you, you're like, oh, I saw it when I was 8. I was like, yeah, I'm Nick at Night.
Yeah, no, it's like
on reruns.
I'm having to like really reach back. Like, man, I think I remember what they're talking about.
That's Elliot. You just heard. I'm Chris.
I'm Marco.
That's Marco. Yeah. He says his name better than I ever could. That's for sure.
I try to jump in there before you butcher it, but fair enough.
We are reviewing The Front Runner, which is the latest film from, I would say he's earned the term celebrated director, Jason Reitman. He's made a few films that I think are masterpieces, and he's made a few films I don't care for at all.
But I feel like he gets a lot of credit he doesn't deserve.
You will never take Thank You for Smoking away from me. I'm sorry. That movie is incredible. And that's still the best movie he ever made.
He feels like a wannabe Aaron Sorkin.
This really felt like Aaron Sorkin directed by Robert Altman.
But that's the biggest problem with this film. Ultimately, it is kind of a wannabe Aaron Sorkin. And ain't nobody Aaron Sorkin but Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah.
I mean, Mamet at times, like when he wants to do political stuff, and not always, but sometimes he can get that same sort of diamond spewing out of characters' mouths with this sort of thing. But nobody does political humor on some level stuff with lots of like tension like Sorkin. And unfortunately, that includes Reitman and his team of writers. This movie, which follows Gary Hart, who was the Democratic, like, really, there
in the
is
center of Colorado,
there, like the bulk of the parallel universes out there that exist. He became president.
Yeah.
Right. Like he, it was so close. It was ridiculous. Motherfucker couldn't keep his dick in his pants.
And like, we have a moon colony. Trump is in jail.
Trump never even went to jail because he would have never gotten into a position to actually be investigated.
Yeah, no.
He went to jail for something else.
For something else. For you.
Yeah. This was in 1988.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. The movie starts in 84. You're right. Because he did run once.
Yeah.
Didn't.
Lost to Mondale,
and we all know how that turned out.
Not well.
And then came back to face George Bush Sr.
It was totally understandable, too. Yeah. I mean, first off, Reagan, no matter how you might feel about him, there's no question that he had a very affecting charisma that like people loved. George Bush, on the other hand, did not.
No.
And when Hart was running against Mondale, nobody was really taking – the Democrat Party was not taking into account as much that force of charisma. The second time around, they were like, we are not losing that battle again. We're going with a guy that's super good looking, that's really charismatic. You know, we're going with this guy. What could go wrong? And he was so far ahead.
Yep.
Like so far ahead that everyone was like, there is literally no way this guy is not
going to be president. What the Democrats need was a guy that had the same problems but – No shame. He's like, what? I did it. What?
And this movie, Hugh Jackman is playing Gary Hart and doing it with aplomb, I think.
He was the best part of the movie.
Yeah, easily.
No, I mean, you need someone to capture that same level of charisma, and that is what Gary Hart brought to the table. Apart from, you know, of clearly insistence on focusing on issues, on, you know, taking a sort of an intellectual approach to things and kind of before Obama, sort of being a candidate who was like trying to be above the fray of petty politics and going, no, let's focus on the issues that matter. Let's not deal with all the petty stuff. Yet he also came wrapped up in this sort of Western Colorado cowboy type sort of in a sort of a Kennedy-esque vein.
Yeah, Colorado cowboy, which is very different.
Iowa
cowboy.
More of a William Sonoma type cowboy.
Exactly.
Yeah, imagine if the Kennedys were on a ranch.
Pairs of Birkenstocks is what we're saying.
Yeah. and suspenders when he wants to look like he's just one of the regular folks.
Look, I mean, this movie makes clear, like, his staff, who are next to him, the world's biggest bunch of nerds, you know, are like constantly, like, when he's going out and doing stuff that's very unpresidential before this, like, he goes out to a timber chopping contest to throw axes, and everyone's like, this is it. This is, we're watching the end of this campaign right here. And he nails it. It's a bullseye, and is like totally like, yeah.
But whatever. he also
snaps
shown that
his suspenders. Everyone's like, you're God.
But he also makes clear he doesn't want to play the game. Also, like, I don't want to do these silly photo ops. Well, you should go do this. Like, what does it matter? I don't need to be on
people. But he's doing that. He's just doing it his own way.
His own way. Yeah. Correct.
And he, as he points out in one point in the film, like, there's never been a Democrat from the West who's won.
Yeah.
A Western Democrat. This is a whole new ball game we're playing.
It's the future.
Yeah. And which is still a valid point.
Absolutely.
But you've got his wife, Vera Farmiga, who seems very much like they're very extremely close during the first part of this movie.
The movie shifts.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Let me just finish the very brief description of the plot. Until we see that, yes, Gary cannot, in fact, keep his dick in his pants. He fools around with a girl he meets on a boat trip, Donna Rice, played by Sarah Paxton. And the movie's very... God, I'm more discreet than the press was about it. Just kind of like even making it seem like we know he fucked her. Why are you being so evasive, movie? The movie is being evasive about it.
Because the movie, it has conflicting messages. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting because I was thinking this when the movie starts. It starts with Tom Brokaw, a voiceover of Tom Brokaw, is talking about the New Hampshire primary in 84. And the interesting thing is that no matter what you do, it's a marker for the time period. So Brokaw wasn't thinking that he was going to be looked at 30 years from now and be like, oh, they're going to look back at me and how I reported on this. But even their reporting is something that we can look back in with a 2018 Me Too lens and see it, because this movie is just primary colors. But in 2018, but not as good.
It's determined to filter things through a modern lens. But that being said, I didn't feel like those conversations that it's focusing on didn't happen. I never felt like these were not discussions that happened. But it definitely, there's a point the movie does, as you said, shift to much more of the female perspective, which is the idea is, hey, man, you may be a great guy in every other way. You may have been a Kennedy-level president, but the winds have shifted, and you're not thinking how your actions affect people in your life and not just the female around you. I mean, like, it was surprising to me the movie spent as much time as it did on Donna Rice, and just how fucking shitty this must have been for her. I mean, her life was over at that point. This girl who was like had a college degree at the top of her class and was like, you know, looked like she had a strong career in front of her, and and then ended up, because she had very few options, left posing for Playboy.
Oh, she did
years later. Yeah. Yeah, I believe so.
Well, she had been like four, so I don't remember.
Okay, now a little context. I mean, and I think Chris can back me up on here. Now, I was pretty young when this happened, but I still remember it. The names Gary Hart and Donna Rice are always burned in my brain. You know, but I absorbed it mostly through the pop culture of the time. So, like, Saturday Night Live skits, Johnny Carson monologues, which you get a clip of here.
Which was fucking hilarious.
Which is great.
This is pre-internet. We absorbed all our information through those sources.
Yeah, Doonesbury and Bloom County. But I didn't really understand the full scope of the story at the time. And, yeah, you definitely got the depiction of Donna Rice in the media was largely like, well, she's just some bimbo that he picked up and he threw it all away. And what Gary Hart, for all of his qualifications, he is forever known as the guy who said, look, none of this stuff's true. I'm a normal guy. You know, you can follow me. You're going to be bored. And you know what? The reporter said, all right, let's follow Gary Rice and see what we find out. Gary Hart. I conflated the two. Yeah. And sure enough, he had the misfortune to be found with a woman that he met on a boat called the Monkey Business.
Yeah, which is so ironic. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. There were a lot of jokes about that.
But here's the thing. It's interesting because they actually, in the movie, they talk about LBJ after Kennedy died. He said, and apparently, this is all hearsay, but LBJ apparently said to the journalist, hey, you saw some stuff from Kennedy. Give us the same coverage.
Oh, and LBJ was totally.
He's like, no, you're going to see some women coming in and out of these rooms and give us the same consideration gave Kennedy.
Here's the thing. Well, the interesting thing is that what we thought at the time, like I can go back to Bill Clinton, Monica. Mm-hmm. At the time, it was all framed in Republicans versus Democrats. And this is just a ploy. And Monica Lewinsky and Linda Tripp were vilified in almost all media, whether they were liberal or conservative.
Yeah.
They were just, it was just an article of faith that these women, quote unquote, vilified.
Yeah.
And then even before that, it's even worse. And the thing that's really interesting is you can't see the full picture when you're in the picture. What we see when you can, what the thing this movie does, like I have a few problems with this movie. One of the things I really like about it is it lets you pull back the frame. So you get this wide angle lens of what really was happening, but we couldn't see it because we were still in it. And this is, I'm not trying to be too high minded, but it's basically the patriarchy breaking down a pillar of itself. Mm-hmm. It used to be that you could just cheat with impunity, and everybody was cheating, so everybody covered for each other.
It was a men's club. I mean, the press was completely complicit.
They're like, we don't report on these things. Which we're
like, okay, and I mean, hell, let's face it, most countries outside of America still are like, we don't give a shit about that stuff.
I mean, it's definitely like, pre-Me Too.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, like, it does raise questions in here that I think are valid in as even an argument versus this sort of analysis. Like, okay, so it says his wife totally knew he was cheating. Yeah. It was like, it wasn't the first time. And she was like, you know what? But everything else is fine. I allowed him certain things. I always said, don't embarrass me. Right? It's like you think that the moment you start running for president is that moment you go, okay, well, all that shit's got to go on.
Because it's the arrogance of him.
Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, he is very arrogant, yeah. And he's tied into that idea of he's a very old school politician in many ways. Yeah. And it's like he was one of the first in America who was like realizing that those winds had shifted. Like, fuck, you can't do that anymore. Yeah. Like, America's opinion has changed. It finds the press complicit in that as well, of saying like this sort of like television, which I always felt they didn't make strong enough an argument that how television changed newspaper press as well, yeah. That it became more about salaciousness and like get whatever you can, right. It doesn't matter. Well, but the press was very complicit, and everyone was like, no, man, you get that much power, come on.
Well, the flip side of that is that argument is also in a. Well, it's not even the flip side. It's sort of the gentleman's agreement that's going on between the press and the politicians. And you hear that coming out of, you know, as the quote from Johnson. But you also see Alfred Molina playing Ben Bradley, which is an odd piece of casting.
The editor for the Washington Post.
Right. Famous for being the editor for All the President's Men during that period. But at one point he says, look, you know, I remember when we were on the campaign trail and the reporters went there. I mean, we all fucked one another, but we didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
It was sort of an agreed thing. Like, we'll keep politics, political, personal stuff. That doesn't get in. And what this film tries to do is to indict. And there's a really good article right now by Tom Fiedler, one of the characters, the reporter who broke this story, who basically refutes some of the factual reporting of this movie. And you can go read it if you want. It's an interesting read. But it tries to make the argument that the Miami Herald introduced tabloid journalism into politics, which actually isn't true. That shit's been around forever. But if you want to go back further than that, you know, you probably have to go to the 1800s. I mean, in the modern era, it just seemed to quiet down. Like a man could have his peccadillos on the side, whatever he wanted to do.
Which is not to say we're defending that.
No, not at all.
But I also, like, I have a certain amount of me. Like, I remember when everything happened with Clinton, I was kind of like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like, my take on it, I really don't give a shit about any of this. Whatever happens there is personal between him, his wife, and whoever he cheated on. And to some degree, I still felt that way until stories started coming out about earlier shit with him arguably forcing people to do stuff.
And this is my argument with the movie, which is it seems to be saying things were better then. You had good candidates who would come out because they weren't afraid of. That's Gary Hart's final statement in the movie. I think candidates aren't going to run because we're going to get all the shit exposed.
I see why you think that, but I think it's not what the movie was going for. It's just the movie's put together in a weird way that they try to have it three ways.
Sorry.
Didn't mean to do that, but yeah.
Elliot tries to have it three ways. Gets quick, run to the presses.
It's kind of double-ended.
Yeah.
They try to get the message of the press shouldn't be doing this. Oh, privacy. And then they want to talk about, they sort of just have a prison for Me Too. And then they want to, there's almost a bleak mention of Donald Trump at the very, very end. Yeah,
not specifically, but like where you can't miss it.
Yeah, and it's like they, the movie could have used somebody to go, because like the dialogue is decent and the scenes are good, but the way it's all put together doesn't give you a clear theme.
Well, it's, I don't know if he's trying to give you a clear theme.
But then what is a story supposed to do besides give you, like, a message?
I do really appreciate them going into it with a sense of, like, I felt like he was trying very hard to show multiple sides of a complicated discussion. I really
do. But then take a side.
But I don't think you need to. I don't agree with you on that. I like that it didn't. I just don't think part of it well. No, because I think it's not chicken shit, because there isn't a clear answer to this. There's not. I mean, like, is it?
The clear answer is you should not fuck other people when you're married, especially when you're running for president.
Not even that. The clear answer is he is a person, man, woman. He is a person in a position of extreme power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this other person is not.
With the movie, and you were saying it's more on the side of him, I disagree with you too, because there's a speech that's like somebody gives to him, was like, look, or to somebody else, like, look, the guy's in a position of power, and he is completely complicit in taking advantage by nature of that. Right. And I'm like, I see what you're saying. I'm still not 100%
I agree with
that.
The problem with that is that they do treat the Donna Rice character, I think, she should be a bigger character in this. First time she's introduced, she's barely glimpsed. When they get together, it's very obfuscated.
It would have been nice to have like a concurrent story.
When it finally gets to her, she basically gets a couple of good scenes, mostly with one of the female staffers, who I'm sure is also a composite character.
But think about how
they basically send her out to the wolves. And she basically has one or two scenes and then almost literally exits the movie. Mm-hmm. And you get the feeling that Donna Rice isn't really a person, even though you have one person who has one little speech about, hey, you know, we really treated this person badly. But the film treats her as just like a catalyst to a larger argument and then dispenses with her, like the campaign did.
At some point, the movie loses its way in terms of feeling like it's about real people and feels more like it's trying so hard to address modern day issues couched in these imaginary discussions that may or may not have actually happened, that it's distracting and kind of pulls you out of it.
Yeah, and if you wanted to do that, take your time and do it right and build it into the foundation of this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a perfect, you know, thank you so much. Because the way they introduce Donna, she's like, do you take money for photos? Like, they introduce her shitty. They don't, like, you get introduced to Gary Hart, he's basically white Obama.
Yeah.
Just, like, the perfect guy. You get a full third of this movie where it's an uplifting campaign movie. What if the first third of the movie was just Donna Rice growing up? Just her going to college. You see her as a full person.
The first time you meet her, she's just from the back. It's all on him.
Yeah.
No, but the problem is,
the first clear shot we get of her is she's just sitting on a couch with her mascara running in tears because she realizes her life is ruined and she's being grilled by J.K. Simmons, who can reduce anybody to tears.
She's not allowed to leave.
She's not allowed to leave. And, you know, she's got to stick to this story. They're still kind of stringing her on, like, well, yeah, no, we'll get you that job, you know, with the campaign.
And no one is going to know that it was you.
Yeah.
No one is going to know. And you can see it. And they're, just as they're saying, you're like, they're lying.
Yeah.
They absolutely know that all this is bullshit. But it is, that's that level of power, you know. There's no time for hurting, like, dealing with someone's hurt feelings.
She's tossed aside, and the movie tosses her aside.
To some degree, I understand that. If you're at that level of things, you're like, okay, come on, realistically, can you really make an argument and go, like, but what if her feelings are hurt? What if, like, her life isn't as good?
I get it. Politicians
will do that. The next guy going, well, then she shouldn't have slept with a guy she knew he was married. But that goes back to that argument of, like,
She was seduced by power.
Exactly. I want to reaffirm, I do like that this movie is dealing with a lot of conflicting messages, and I do like that it's not taking a specific stand on any one thing, but I think most people are not, because we're in a very divisive culture right now where people feel very strongly with the way that they do about things. As Elliot pointed out, he feels very strongly about his take on the way the movie should have dealt with this, which was to take a stronger stand on one side or the other. I wish we had more stuff that was more eloquent in exploring how many of the issues that even are confounding us now are so much more complicated than we make them out to be, but this is not the movie that does it well.
Yeah, and you know what? You brought me back at the very end. It's like, I want, if you're going to go for all this nuance, don't give me the first third where you're only getting the best part of him. Because you're bringing the viewer in and you're setting up him as the hero, but then you don't really tell a fall, and you don't, it's just a, if you want to tell a nuanced story, tell a nuanced story from the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah. It's like they just were like, well, we want to get people in the theaters, but so we're going to have this like encouraging part of the beginning, but we want to say something interesting, but I don't know what we want
to
do.
What I think the movie wants to do, and I think why it takes that tack, it gives us a lot. And this all happens in 3 weeks. It literally says, you know, week one.
A lot of things.
A lot can happen.
It says a lot can happen in three weeks. Right at the beginning of the film.
The problem with the movie, if you are of this sort of Me Too generation and you look and you frown upon men in power who use that power consciously or not to, you know, for their own sexual advantage, you're going to find that questionable, because that's certainly what Gary Hart did for all of his good qualities. The movie tries to depict him as a tragic figure and ends with him, you know, basically criticizing the media for invading his privacy, for making a personal thing, front page news, rather than focus on the issues.
You keep doubling down on the movie tries to make him nothing but a tragic figure, and I totally disagree.
No, I think it makes him look flawed, by no doubt. But he's a flawed tragic figure.
He's a tragic figure.
If you look at
Hart.
He's a tragic figure, but so is Hamlet, and that shit was his own fault. Like, I think that the movie does try to show him as a sympathetic tragic figure, but one that totally dug his own grave.
No, look.
But to me, the thesis of the movie is given to him at the end. He is the one who's allowed to state what you assume, because of its placement in the movie, what is the filmmaker's summation, which is, you know, if you guys keep doing this shit, you're not going to get good candidates anymore.
I'm not sure I agree with that.
I don't agree either, because, like, I don't think they – I think they maybe have thought that deep, but I don't think they had the – I don't think they had the guts to really say it.
Well, he literally said it in the last speech of the movie.
That was based on his actual speech.
Right, but that's what they chose to frame it with.
But the hero who loses says that. And so that's his viewpoint. He's still losing.
The movie is going out of its way to show you how wrong he is repeatedly. I don't think just the fact that that's one of the last scenes, which is based on his actual words, takes away from that level of balance. I think, like I said, it's supposed to be that they keep pointing out throughout the movie how he just doesn't get it.
Yeah, exactly. He just doesn't get it.
There's so many things that he's just this great guy on, but when it comes to a number of different things, the modern day things, it's like he's a man out of time.
Exactly.
And that whole thing, like, you're like, no, dude, this is not the way it works.
It's like he was playing musical chairs and the music just stopped.
Yeah, and he just was the one who didn't have a chair. Yeah. No question. I don't agree with you, Marco. I think that, like, the movie is not trying to paint him, his opinion, as the more sympathetic one. I think it is trying to show it as tragic, but because the fact that, like, he was caught in the shifting of generations.
I mean, ultimately, though, I think it's – the movie, I think, comes down on – closer to Gary Hart's side than it does the media.
In the movie,
because the tragedy,
I don't think the movie has to be both anti-media and pro-Hart.
I think it's anti-tabloid journalism.
Yeah.
I think it says, here was a guy who could have been great, and the media fucked it up and blew this thing out of proportion. It ruined this young woman's life. It ruined his political career. And one thing, and again, going back to that Tom Fiedler article, where he says one of the inconvenient truths that the movie leaves out, because the movie would have you believe that this one indiscretion destroyed this man's career. However, 7 months later, he jumped back in the race, thinking that enough time had passed.
Right.
And then he ended up running. And just ended up losing because, you know, by that point, he was damaged goods.
If he had run as a Republican today, he would have won.
Well, that's the thing. You know, if the media has become even increasingly invasive, But so have our standards have lowered along because now things that would have gotten anybody thrown off the campaign trail now seem like nothing.
Here's the thing. The movie itself is sort of a commentary on our current culture because it's really interesting because it's a person who came of age in, I think, the mid to late 90s viewing his past but presenting it to a generation that I don't think he fully understands. It feels like it was very conscious. He's trying to make a movie that's palatable to the most audiences in 2018, but he doesn't want to get attacked as a social justice warrior. But he also doesn't want to be vilified by what he thinks are SJW.
You say that. I disagree once again and say I feel like he was trying to take a balanced viewpoint of a complicated situation.
But it's not... He is trying to take a bath.
I don't think he succeeds.
That's what I'm saying.
I think he's trying really hard to do that.
I don't know if he's a...
I agree with.
I don't know if Reitman himself is cognizant of his own biases, is my thing. Because if you make this movie 10 years from now, Gary Hart is he's a tragic villain. Because everything in this movie is Gary Hart's fault.
You say that, but... Look how fast winds can change in American culture. I'm just saying, who knows what 10 years from now.
I am saying right now, if you look at the root of every bad thing that happened to Gary Hart, it is Gary Hart's dick.
He
did that. There's nobody to blame. If he didn't want to get this shit on the front page, don't fuck somebody who's not your wife.
Right. Yeah.
It's a very simple calculation.
It's a very old story, though. How many men have risked everything? And then they still thought, oh, I can have this thing,
of men in power. I would say probably 90% of all men who've ever reached that level of power have cheated on their significant others, their wives, what have you. But I'm not defending that.
No, I don't think you are. But that isn't – I'm saying in just terms of – bare minimum causation, not even putting moral judgment on it.
I'm saying that this
he was, is the reason for his own downfall.
Absolutely, but the reason why it's tragic is because he was the first guy after that phase, as they point out. Like everybody else before this, nobody gave a fuck. And suddenly people are giving a fuck, but you're so out of touch with how the world really works. Or even if you get the feeling this is a guy who doesn't actually watch television, you know? I was like, no, I don't care about any of that stuff. I'm a normal guy. I'm like he both wants to be a member of the hoi polloi and a member of the rabble at the same time, but he's not. He's definitely a member of the hoi polloi.
As one character says, this is not just an every guy. It's like he's the next fucking president of the United States.
I think there are a lot of things here that are very interesting, and I think the issue. It's not even really so much script. It's tonally in the way it's directed. I feel never completely comes together the way he wants it to. And I've got to double down on my argument that I think that it is more important to examine these things with a nuanced, balanced look of sort of there's a lot of shit going on here. A lot of it has to do with the exact period of time when it was happening. There's a lot of reasons to look at him as not a tragic villain, but a tragic hero where this was a good guy who was like, this is just the way it's always been. Even his wife was like, yeah, okay, yeah, sure, this is a thing. I knew I made certain sacrifices because I love him and I believe in him.
I agree with you, but what I'm saying is...
I'm not defending women
I don't think you're defending him. Yeah. What I'm saying is, at the end of the day, the thing that I got... I wish they had really... And I'm not trying to criticize this movie for what it's not. But it's just... I wish they had really crystallized that... He never understood that all his problems were his own making.
It would have been nice to see like a epilogue 20 years later interview type thing. Like end with the credits with an interview of him talking about it like many, many years later and being contrite. But maybe he was never contrite. I have no idea.
But the thing is, he continued to, serve in politics. I mean, he was a special envoy to Ireland. I mean, during the Obama administration, he was like on the chair for Homeland Security. At some point afterwards, he went back to Oxford and got a doctorate. I mean, the man. Now I don't know what happened to Donna Rice,
and that's the
in the me yeah. afterwards.
Yeah,
but she's he track, didn't suffer that. Track.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't give a shit what happened to Gary Hart. He made his bed, and no matter anybody's motivations of the people that came after him, He has to deal with the consequences he invited.
But I also don't 100% agree with the argument of like, oh, well, it's totally not on any woman to when she sleeps with a married man in power. It's not her fault on any level. I'm sorry. I call bullshit.
No, no. I am not saying you're talking about, I'm not talking about contributory fault.
Right.
I am saying he had complete control. Nobody forced him to do any of that.
No, right. No. I mean, in terms of his own thing, yes. But in terms of Donna Rice being like, not complicit, I disagree. I disagree with that entire argument. I think that's confabulation and getting deep into, like, I've often, like, that whole, like, yes, obviously power is seductive, but guess what? On both sides, it's like...
But I'm talking about asymmetric power. One party is a senator.
Yeah.
Probably rich. I'm just assuming. He's rich senator, running for president, has... People,
do you feel like if you were around back then and you were a hot young thing and Geraldine Ferrara came up to you and was like, hey, babe, what's going on? And you're like, aren't you married? Would you be
look, I'm not casting myself Geraldine as some moral.
Ferrara. I know, bad example. She wasn't the most attractive woman. But
I would have settled for Thatcher. I mean, just go to the top, man.
This is not a moral argument. This is a causation argument.
Right.
It's saying, taking all the morals away from it, just bare facts. He's a senator running for president, and he's rich. He is, what, 46 or something?
Yeah, he's about that. He's younger than me.
Yeah. He's the woman is in her early 20s.
He was younger than me.
Like,
I ruined my life.
Well, the thing is, you never accomplished nearly as much as Gary Hart, but you never lost as much either.
Yeah. And it's like, that's just different levels of power. And if somebody was as good, I don't care what your culture is, honestly. If you're inherently good, you just do the right thing. It's my same problem.
You believe more in. We've had this argument before. Yeah. You believe in less nuanced definitions of good and evil than I do. I don't think there's any such thing as good and evil. I don't think they exist. Everything is a shade of gray. Everything.
See, I think that's a moral safe house where everybody's guilty, so nobody is.
Totally disagree. But anyway, Bartlett. Let's go to final thoughts, Elliot. We've said a lot about this film already. We've obviously been very effusive about our opinions about both the film and the moral quandaries presented by it. So let's just go directly to pretty much what your actual rating is.
Well, I tell you, I can't hate a movie that makes me think this much.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly. Technically, I really think they could have... It feels like a movie that wanted to hit a home run but decided to try for a double. It sort of just wimped out. And I don't know why, but it just doesn't go far enough into what it's doing. It's structurally, it is not designed well enough to tell the type of nuanced story it's trying to tell. And so you get the first 30 minutes is West Wing. The first third is West Wing. The next third is, to me, is Primary Colors. And then the last third is this sort of jumble mishmash of we got to mention Me Too. And then we're just going to sort of end it. And so even then, I can't give it anything lower than a 7 New Hampshire primaries out of 10.
What about you, Marco?
Well,
you can say it. What about you?
Me?
No, you say your name. What about you?
Me?
Oh, no. God damn.
I know what he's trying to do. I just stopped playing along. In all honesty, I'm kind of on Elliot's side with this in that I always see it as a good sign of a movie when it can invite discussion. You know, I mean, there's the kind of movies that everyone will go like, oh, this is awful or this is great. And then there's those ones in the middle where like, this ain't bad, but, you know, I got some quibbles. And I think this movie kind of fits in that category. It is sort of perfectly timed to come out at this particular moment in history. I think it's trying to suggest a lot of things about what's going on today. And I agree with both of you that sometimes it succeeds and sometimes it doesn't. A lot of the movie coasts on the charm of Hugh Jackman, who is just fantastic in this. Of course, this is his front runner Oscar role, no pun intended. But the cast is great across the board. And I like the idea of this sort of kaleidoscopic madhouse view of a political campaign where people are crossing back and forth. This is a very hard movie sometimes just to understand what's going on because the conversations overlap so often. I lost a lot of things and so that alone makes it worth a rewatch. Ultimately, I do wish it had made a little bit firmer decisions as to what it wanted to be. But I'm with Elliot. I cannot give it anything. I'm going to give it a little bit higher than you, actually, because I appreciated the attempt to create a nuanced picture of all sides, but I don't think it always worked. I give this 7.5 out of 10 boats named Monkey Business.
Jesus.
I was struggling to come up with something.
Because I got the feeling y'all would rate this considerably lower than I did, and I'm going to rate it lower than both of you guys.
Really?
I still, which isn't to say that I didn't find this film interesting. I did. I think one of the biggest problems is just a viewing experience. It's kind of dry. A lot of it moves pretty slow. There's a lot of attempts at humor that don't really work. There's a lot of, like, attempts to be Aaron Sorkin with characters talking fast and over each other that don't translate and aren't that great. There's moments like, as a comedy guy, I was like, yeah, I see what you're trying to do. And maybe you should try and create your own thing, because you're trying so hard to be Aaron Sorkin right now that you can't miss it. And
it's like a cover band.
And you ain't Aaron Sorkin. I know Aaron Sorkin, sir, and you are no Aaron Sorkin.
As the music swells.
This movie is ambitious, and I give it that. A lot of points, it's ambitious in a way a lot of other political films are not. And I personally like the fact that I feel like this was strongly trying to show multiple sides of this discussion, of this situation from an ethical point of view. But once again, it doesn't succeed at it. It's awkward and unbalanced and uneven. I mean, like, if they really wanted to do that, then Vera Farmiga should have had a much bigger role to play in this film.
Yeah.
And Donna Rice, as much as they gave her a little bit to do, should have had a much bigger role to play. And I understand that to some degree, that's not accurate to what the public perception of the news was at this point. But this movie is not following the public perception of the news. It's following intimate and imagined stories of what was going on behind the scenes and conversations that all seem plausible, certainly. But definitely picking and choosing what things they want to show. I did think this was interesting. I can't say I've ever seen anything that I felt like was just like this movie, and Hugh Jackman is certainly terrific in it, but overall, it's kind of a failed experiment, albeit an entertaining one. I give it a 6.5 out of 10 mustachioed Mike Judges.
All right.
I was like, why is Mike Judge even in this movie? Well,
no, Bill Burr was in this
movie. Yeah,
there's a lot of people in this movie. Like
Kevin Pollak, Ari Grainor,
Richie Haven, J.K. Simmons. I mean, there's a lot of people that I thought were going to be bigger roles, and yeah, they just kind of drift by. And again, it's that Altman-esque ensemble casting of people talking and passing one another, and you lose one conversation as you follow another group, which is kind of invigorating until you realize, Jesus Christ, there's two or three key people in this movie that we should really be focusing on right now.
By the way, Monkey just saw you petting one of my other cats, and he's going to go to the press.
Oh, okay.
That's going to be Monkey Business.
That's going to be serious Monkey Business.